Hello, and welcome to the Immersive Chemistry Podcast, a podcast which examines the intersection of chemistry, chemical engineering, game design, educational sciences, and technology. In each episode, we explore the impact of immersive learning research on these fields through interviews and discussion. As always, I'm joined by my co-host, Jesse. Jesse, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Thank you, Tim. How are you?
I'm also doing well.
So, today we will share our discussion we had last week. So we recorded this conversation, I think on Monday or Tuesday, and I actually really enjoyed the discussion. So why don't we play the recording now?
Our guest today is Yuanyuan Hu, a colleague of mine at Utrecht University, and she is also a PhD researcher on the Charming Project. I've had the pleasure of working with Yuanyuan for almost a year now at Utrecht. She's helped me with some of my own research involved in the literature review I'm currently doing. And I've also been able to work with her on a meta-analysis, which she's been working on. And we're lucky enough to have her as a guest today, where she, I'm sure, is going to share more information about that later on. So Yuanyuan, maybe to begin, firstly, welcome. And maybe for our audience, they would be interested in hearing a little bit about your background.
I originally come from China, and I've spent most of the time in education. I got a bachelor in chemistry education and master in chemistry. Then I taught chemistry at an IB school in Shanghai for 3 years, and another 2 years at a public school. But when I was teaching, I found some instructions worked, but some are not, and I don't know why. So I thought this trial and error method may be not a good way to explore how learning happens. So last year, I moved to Netherlands and became a PhD in education at Utrecht University.
Okay, so maybe for our listeners, they're not exactly sure what an IB school is. Can you provide a little bit more context about that?
IB school is, the full name is International Baccalaureate School. It's kind of like international education.
So an international baccalaureate school is actually a
international education system.
Okay, so you worked at an international schools in China, and were you actually teaching in English at these schools?
I would say it's bilingual teaching because you have to teach some concept, like it's really hard for students to understand in English because it's chemistry. You got some terminologies and you have to explain them like in Chinese. So basically it's a bilingual teaching method.
Okay, and the International Baccalaureate is a curriculum. They offer a framework for curriculums to be built on. And this was in Shanghai, I understand.
Yeah.
And also, did you work in southern China as well?
Yeah, exactly. As you said, like the IB is actually a system and also like a teaching pedagogy. It's like you have a general specific curriculum you can follow, but actually they require you to localize, to customize your teaching system according to the countries you have or according to the cities where you have. I teach another 2 years at a public school. It's in Zhuhai, which is like really close to Macau. It's in the southern of China. And the reason why I want to teach that because I got this teaching experience in international school and I want to see if there any difference like between the teaching and the learning in international school and the public school. So that's why I moved to Zhuhai and started another 2 years as a chemistry teacher.
That's very interesting, Yuanyuan. And can you share with us what is your PhD topic about and in which working package of the Charming Project are you working with?
Yeah, I guess you all know that like there are three work packages in Charming Project. Work package one is targeting children in primary education. And work package two is targeting students in secondary school and higher education. And work package three is targeting employees in chemical engineering. So I'm in work package two, and my PhD project is design guidelines for chemistry game-based learning. And I'm doing research on how to bring VR games into chemistry.
So what do you want to do with that? So what is your research question?
There are two big questions actually we are trying to figure out. Like the first one is students learn better with games than conventional media? And the second question is how to improve learning with games? So to answer the first question, we did a systematic review, a meta-analysis on game-based learning in chemistry education. And we find students do learn better with games than other conventional media, but only in their cognitive learning outcome, I mean, knowledge and skills. But they didn't feel more motivated. This is kind of like conflict with what people assume that games are more motivating. And then we are trying to explain why this is not the case. For example, maybe there are games for learning and the students may feel pressure they have to learn something and this might decrease their motivation. Or maybe the problem came from like how we measure motivation. Is it possible that students indeed were motivated during gameplay, but the motivation decreased after they played the game? So as what we see in the articles we have in the meta-analysis, then most of the time and most studies, we measure motivation after they play the game. So this may not reflect the actual level of students' motivation during gameplay, but we don't know the real reason yet.
That's very interesting, Yuan. So therefore, what is your next step taking advantage of what you learned from your meta-analysis? So what are you going to do?
Yeah, I guess the next step is figure out answers for the second question, like how to improve the learning with games. This is not only about the effectiveness of educational intervention, I mean, effect size, if you want to say. I'm not obsessed with that. But, I mean, this may be like the focuses of context, like for whom, or when, and where, under which conditions we should use in game-based learning. Let's say a teacher wants their students to learn with games. What is the best way to do that? And then this relates to a specific areas in educational science we call it instructional design. For example, should we let the students play the game individually or in groups? Or should we give students feedback? If yes, when should we give that and how should we give? Those are the questions we are trying to figure out. And we hopefully, like from our research, the teachers could get some guidelines to using game-based learning in their own teaching and learning.
That's very nice, Janjuan. So then, can you say how are you going to do that? So what is your general plan in a study? How are you going to measure these things?
Yeah, I would say like you have to, for us, we are trying to use a mixed research method, like the qualitative method and the quantitative method. I mean, the qualitative one, basically, like you have to measure students' learning outcome before and after they play the game. And you give them different instructions. So that's basically like lots of people doing for the educational intervention. You calculate an effect size and you compare the intervention. Does it work or does it not work? And also we are kind of like want to do the qualitative research method, like a team you're doing. Maybe you're trying to interview the players and see what they feel. Do they feel like a struggle or confused when they play the game? Do they have other problems when they're playing with the games? Something like that.
So you're interested in both what is going on, so what learning is happening, and you're also interested in why the learners are more engaged. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. It's like sometimes when we're doing this educational invention and you can read articles, some articles like, and we say, okay, we try play with games and we found the students learning better, but they couldn't explain why they're learning better. Oh, the worst thing is like, we try it, but it doesn't work. And I don't know why. And they didn't play, like they didn't give a explanation why it doesn't work. So we are more interested in that, the mechanics behind it. Why does it work and why it doesn't?
And I think, Jesse, that links quite closely to the conversation that we were having in our last podcast discussing Emanuele's points.
Exactly.
So, Yuan, I understand that you've also been looking specifically at VR games in chemistry. And I mean, you've dragged me down to the VR lab at Utrecht University a few times to give them a go. Maybe Maybe you can share some insights you've learned. Specific games might be useful for some of our listeners to learn about.
Yeah, I admit that because I need your opinions about how you're playing with your game, your experience. Yeah, VR is not a new concept like for a couple of years, but it is actually a newly emerged area in chemistry. Maybe I can introduce three of them. The first one is the HoloLab Champion. You already played that. It was developed by the show game for high school students. There are 20 mini labs in which you could practice your chemistry lab skills. And also, you have experienced that. It's pretty much like a game show, right?
Yeah. So when you say there's 20 mini labs, maybe you can describe what exactly that means. What is a mini lab?
In mini labs, like there's a certain in the individual mini lab, you can practice a specific like lab skills. For example, you try to do a flame tester, or you try to measure certain things. Then you practice how to measure certain things, like how to use in a balance or how to use in a beaker or something like that. And there's a host in the game. So after you're doing something right, he will give you some feedback. And if you do something wrong, we also like cheer you up. And it could, I guess it could be fun to play with for the children. And the second one is MEL chemistry. Did you heard about that?
I haven't heard about that one. What about you, Jesse?
I have heard about it and I tried it in my phone and I found the content very nice. Like they developed it in a very nice, maybe software tool, etc. And I like it. But in the phone, it was not that easy to follow. But I don't know how it was in VR.
Yeah. I think this one was developed specifically for children in primary school and middle school. So basically it has over like 13 VR lessons you already tested. So it's basically covering the school chemistry curriculum, all of its main topics. That's the amazing part. So they are trying to explain the difficult chemistry concept. And each one of these VR lessons only like 3 to 7 minutes long. So it's very easy for the teachers to put them into a classroom.
So far, we've spoken about HoloLab Champion and MEL. And what was the third one?
The third one is called TapCraft. We also played that in the last networking event. This one is actually hasn't released officially, but I can give you some hint. So it's basically like... you can create stuff using the elements in the periodic table, and you can put lots of stuff in and to test what's the element into the stuff. And you can also build up new stuff using this element. So we hope this game will be like released in next 2 months, but I'm not sure right now.
Actually, I did play this TableCraft on the Oculus Quest, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It was... Yeah, I guess the mode I was in was more exploratory. I sort of just put it on halfway through. We were already playing it, so I didn't get any of the instructions exactly. But yeah, I guess we were building parts of the periodic table based on some machine that would, you could put an apple into the machine and then it would break down the apple into its key chemical compounds. Is that about right, Yuanyuan?
Yeah, exactly. Like you put apple in the machine and you can see what elements in the apple. Or the other way around, you can like using the unknown element and building up new stuff.
That sounds very fun. Actually, I didn't try that one with you guys, but I saw when you were playing and I remember you were laughing a lot. And
yeah, exactly.
That's always a good sign.
And the MEL chemistry, I remember when I tried in my phone, it was very nice for a science geek. You know, the content, etc. is very nice, but it was for me a little bit overwhelming in the phone. So I would give a try in VR maybe someday. Yuan, I wanted to ask if you have experience or read about any challenge about game-based learning.
Yeah, I think so. Because I mean, like for the Jamming project, it's a really big project, but it's also my PhD project. So we are focusing on like game-based learning, but when you took a closer look at the game-based learning, it's a learning environment. So for me, like the game, VR or AR, they are just a tool of technology. So the learning mechanics behind it is actually the same. It's like about how people learn and how learning can be supported. But at the same time, like, learning is really a complex process. Like I mentioned before, like, we need to think about the context, how to use it, think about the student, the space and the time, like who, for whom, when and where, and under which conditions we could use in this game-based learning. And as a researcher, we have to consider all these factors and fit games into teaching and learning. So if it works, I think we're happy, but when it doesn't, we need to figure out why it doesn't work. And that's, I think, the most difficult part, but at the same time, it's the most exciting part of it.
And I have another question. So I was wondering if all that old type of content can be created in a type of a game. For example, sometimes I feel that there are topics in chemistry which are very complex and might be very difficult to put it in such a game where a student really learned the complexity of this topic. Have you read or know about this? So is there any type of any difference between a simple topic, like, for example, the periodic table and the periodicity of the elements, where you can just, you know, create a simple mechanic? But then when you want to learn about more complex stuff, is it that easy to put that mechanics in a game? Have you seen?
I guess the mechanics you talk about, actually, it's more related to game mechanics, right? Like the actions the students can take during the gameplay. I'm not an expert in that, but I would say it depends on, like, the learning objective you want a student to achieve. It's basically like it's related to the learning context. Because if you have different learning content, I guess you need different game mechanics to supply that context and the context. But there's also another mechanics, like I talked before, like it's a learning mechanics, like how people learn or how can we learning can be supported or something like that. This could be like more general mechanics behind it, because sometimes, like, the teachers keep switching between different technology or different tools they use, but the basic ideas of learning, the learning series, is actually the same.
Yeah, and maybe one point is that the level of complexity that the topic you want somebody to learn might not be the thing that determines whether or not it is a easy thing or difficult thing to implement into a game-based situation. It's probably what that specific thing really is.
Yeah, you need to take both of them, like I said, both of the, like, content and the context, basically like the topic and how you are going to using, where are you going to using. You put all these things together and you see what will come out.
So, Yuan, is there anything else that you would like to discuss before we finish up this conversation?
Yeah, I was like, really, there was a topic I want to share with the audience or with you. Like, there was a definition for the PhD in the office, because lots of people asked, what are you doing your PhD? Why did you do a PhD? What if you didn't do something right? What are you going to do? Things like that. So I want to share with you. It says PhD, a definition of the PhD, like, a PhD is an academic that have learned more and more about less and less until they know everything about nothing. Did you hear about the definition?
I haven't heard about that definition, but it definitely resonates.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I want to say, like, this is like an opportunity cost here. On one hand, like, we need to be an expert on certain research area. Like me, I tried really hard to fully understand every aspect of game-based learning. And then on the other hand, when you, like, narrow down yourself in the certain specific area, and you actually lose opportunities to explore other area. So when the people ask the question about my PhD study, I would say, like, PhD study is like learn how to fish, and eventually you want to catch a fish. So I'm learning by doing, and I'm learning and practice by fishing in this pond in game-based learning. But the challenge is, like, how to make sure you can catch a fish. My friends always ask me, like, what if you learn every technique, but in the end, you still can't catch a fish? Because there's no fish in this pond.
Yeah, I guess that's science, though, isn't it?
Yeah, some science, and this also applies to every area. Like, for example, what if there's no fish in the pond where you fish for quite a long time? what if the VR doesn't work in the end? What are you going to do?
I guess it's still a finding, though. It's still an important finding.
Yeah.
Yeah, and recently a professor told me knowing something is better than knowing nothing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and knowing that the pond is empty and free of fish
is
better than not knowing if there's fish in the pond.
Exactly.
Yeah, and also it would say like, you got the fishing skill, so try another pond.
Yeah, fantastic. I think that's a perfect place to end it, Yuan. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to talk to you. And thank you for joining us.
Bye-bye.
Okay, so that was our conversation with Yuan Hu from Utrecht University, which I really enjoyed. Jesse, did you have any main takeaways from that conversation?
Yeah, well, it was really great to hear from her what she's doing right now in the Charming Project and what are the research questions that she is actually investigating. One of the things that I really found very interesting is how people normally assume that what playing games, you're really motivated or can you really motivate students? And sometimes this is not the case. So that was really interesting for me because I also thought that that was the case, you know, like people playing games would always be more motivating because it's fun, etc. But what she mentioned is, it really made me think a little bit about this.
Yeah, it's actually completely flipped on its head. Maybe the our intuition would be that playing a game related to chemistry would be result in a more motivated student or a group of students. However, the learning might actually be less. So there might be less, less learning that actually takes place while the students play the game. However, the results of her meta-analysis seems to suggest that it's actually the opposite. So learning happens, at least learning as is measured in the articles. And because I was involved in the helping her with that sort of meta-analysis and the coding, there is obviously different methods by which the researchers measure what learning happens, and people could probably argue the strengths and weaknesses of each of those methods. But generally speaking, learning was happening. And yeah, like you said, that it wasn't necessarily motivating. Did you have any intuition as to why that might be the case?
Oof. Well, one of the things I can think of, if I think of myself playing these games, I would say that if I have a professor telling me that I have to play this game, you know, because somehow it's part of the program or the course or whatever, and then I have to learn, then might this pressure be one of the reasons why this is not really motivating? Because it's not a motivation that came naturally from myself, but maybe someone else telling me that I have to do this. And that's the only thing I can think about now that cannot be, can be flipping this motivation away or I don't know.
Yeah.
What about you?
Yeah, that resonates with me a lot. I think that people who play games for enjoyment, and actually this is a common conversation that we've had at some network-wide events with some of the PhDs from the game design discipline and from their expertise, really talking about the difference between serious games and games for learning and you know, really what the purpose of a game is. Mm. And I think, yeah, that if there's intrinsic motivation to play the game, I do believe that there's probably, that's very different from having a teacher or a lecturer saying, oh, come and play this, you know, go and play this chemistry game to learn more about the periodic table or whatnot. So I think you're, I think you're onto something there.
Yeah, and maybe it's not that it's totally unmotivating. Maybe it's better than compared to, you know, just studying some topic in a book, very, you know, alone, etc., than playing a game. But it's still not, it doesn't reach this motivation from a very fun game for everyone.
Yeah. Another point that I thought was interesting was the fact that she's developing these guidelines for teachers to use when considering using games in the classroom. And I really like that about this project. And it's similar to also actually what I'm researching is creating these guidelines. And it's nice, it's a nice idea that these guidelines will be for practical use of teachers. Obviously, it's difficult to know how well that will translate after the guidelines have been developed. But I think it's a good idea to offer support to teachers to actually help them put games into their teaching practice.
Yeah, definitely. And I was thinking that about what she mentioned, because sometimes it happens to me as well when I started, somehow I felt, okay, if now we have to start using games or it's something that it seems to be very nice for students to learn, etc., but exactly when to use them and in which situation, etc., might not be that easy to know. And therefore, her guidelines to tell them, the teachers, how to use these games, when is exactly the point in the classroom, etc., or in which situation they fit, it's very important, because then this area or this game-based learning discipline will actually have more application, you know, like guidance. And then if someone really knows when to use it, then this may open up more questions and more things, because people will start using it in the right direction.
Yeah, and I also think it's important to recognize that everybody's context is different. So if guidelines are being developed, they're likely going to be more useful as exactly that, just guidelines. And then the teacher or the lecturer is able to pick and choose which guidelines sort of match their context, match the context of the classroom, match the context of their student base and things like this, these variables that exist within all classrooms or all learning settings. And from that sort of baseline, that's when, after you understand your context, that's when you can apply the sort of different games. Did you have any comments? Actually, I was interested on the games that happen in virtual reality compared to outside of virtual reality. I was wondering if you have any intuition about how those two different sort of ways of playing matter.
Yeah, well, actually, for me, I think that talking about virtual reality, we are adding an extra factor to the context that we are talking about, and that might even complicate more the things if we want to really understand how game or fun happens in a situation. But in my case, and it's very particular, it sometimes is very overwhelming. Because I am not used to the technology yet. I am one of the ones that, from the group, that hadn't less experience playing in VR. So my intuition until now is based on my own experience, because I don't enjoy a lot of input, you know, let's say. It's very hard for me to...
Sometimes a bit overwhelming, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. As I say, maybe because I am not used to it, but in the end, my intuition then, you know, kind of biases me through that path. Like, might be useful for some things, but I don't know if I would enjoy to play the whole time in VR. I don't know.
I think this is a very important point, and I think you would probably be a typical person as regards to the amount of experience in VR. In fact, you're atypical. You probably now already have more experience than the majority of people with virtual reality. So it is interesting to think about how VR compared to AR, compared to a serious game on a desktop computer, how these different mediums actually interact with the experience that the learner has, also how it relates to motivation and engagement and these other topics.
Yeah, but one thing that I actually wanted to mention is that even though I'm very overwhelmed about the technology, because it's a lot sometimes, I'm amazed about the content. Once I tried the Oculus with Philippe.
Oculus Quest.
Yeah, Oculus Quest. I was in this experience of National Geographic watching Peru in the mountains of Cusco, I think it was. And I was amazed. Like, I really felt I was there, and the graphics and the experience itself, I was really overwhelmed in a good sense, you know? I couldn't help to be there for 10 minutes because it was too much for me. But the experience inside and how amazed I was about the graphics and how can I felt over there, it was very, you know, shocking to me. Like, I couldn't thought this would this was possible. So in that sense, then, you know, I feel that there is some room for some experiences. Not sure how, not sure what, but that gave me one of the reasons to still believe in all these technologies. It's something very new, something that can amaze everyone, but we need to find the right way to use them.
Yeah, the medium really lends itself to certain types of experiences. So in some cases, virtual reality will be much better applied to certain experiences as it's related to the content that's trying to be taught, compared with, say, an AR application on a mobile phone or even a PC or tablet game.
Exactly.
Okay, Jesse, I think this probably is a good time to wrap up this episode. Do you have any final comments before we finish up?
Not really, Tim. I think it was a great discussion with Yuan. I'm really happy that she can join us, and I hope that someone else is happy to join us as well next program.
Yes, and I think, like always, I always say it, but I really hope that we'll be able to get Yuan back on the podcast later on as her research progresses. So I'd like to thank everybody for joining us today. And a reminder that the Charming Project has received funding from the European Union's Framework Programme for Research and Innovation through the Horizon 2020 Grant Agreement.